So I said that this evening's shiur would be a review of the halakhot of Tisha B'Av, and we'll go through the main points. People can interrupt with questions if they want. There are obviously some slightly different arrangements this year than there are in usual years because of Tisha B'Av being on a Motzei Shabbat. But other aspects, of course, are unchanged. So we'll start with Shabbat Chazon, and then we'll go through from there. So Shabbat Chazon is, of course, Erev Tisha B'Av. It's interesting. The Rama in the Shulchan Aruch says that on Shabbat Chazon, even on Shabbat Chazon, we don't wear Bigdei Shabbat. That you don't wear Shabbat clothes the whole of the 9 days. So even if you've got something special, you've got an important meeting, or you've got a siyum or something like that, you wouldn't wear Shabbat clothes, and that includes even on Shabbat Chazon, you would go to shul wearing your normal weekday clothes. Many of the Acharonim, perhaps all, most of the Acharonim, say that nowadays we don't follow that din, and we wear Shabbat clothes. But the Aruch HaShulchan actually has a very interesting point that he makes here, and he says that there isn't really a machloket. Those who say that you wear Shabbat clothes aren't really arguing with the Rama. It's just that the reality has changed somewhat. He says in the old days, a person's Shabbat clothes weren't necessarily so different from their weekday clothes. The Gemara in Masechet Shabbat talks about, for Shabbat you would be meshalshel. You would extend your garments a bit. So during the week you would have, your robe, it would be rolled up a bit, so it would be easy to work in the fields and things like that. And when it came to Shabbat, you would extend it. You would drop the hem a bit. So a person wore, essentially the same types of clothes on Shabbat as they did during the week. They were just a little bit better quality. But it wasn't so noticeable whether you were wearing Shabbat clothes or weekday clothes. So therefore, on Shabbat Chazon, it was appropriate to wear weekday clothes because it didn't really look like Aveilut b'Farhesya. It didn't really look like you were mourning publicly on Shabbat. But he says in later generations, people started wearing silk clothes on Shabbat, whereas opposed to woolen clothes during the week, and you would wear a shtreimel on Shabbat as opposed to your regular hat. So then, if you showed up in your weekday clothes, then it would be very clearly that you're observing Avilut on Shabbat. Whereas, if you wear your Shabbat clothes, then it's you've covered that up. So I think one could actually make a case to say that, a person who always wears, a very smart suit, the whole week long, and a crisp white shirt and a silk tie, it's just, for Shabbat, their suit is Pierre Cardin rather than Marks and Spencer's, and their silk tie is £60 instead of £50. But you can't really tell that, unless you're really in the know, that it's Big Day Chol, then maybe there would be a case to say that one should follow the ruling of the Rama. But the principle of the Achronim is that essentially on Shabbat Chazon we don't do anything that publicly demonstrates Avilut. So a question which actually comes up, and it's a point of debate often in shul, certainly in our shul every year, there's somebody who debates this point with me. It's the minhag of singing Chadodi on Friday night to the tune of Elitzion. Chadodi likrat kala, which is very much a Tisha B'Av tune. And even the minhag, which is a well-established minhag, much more well-established, of reading the Haftarah in the tune of Eicha, some people think that it's not right. This is Avilut b'Farhesya. They say Chazon Ish held that you should read the Haftarah in the regular trop, and not in the Eicha trop, because it was Avilut b'Farhesya. So how is it that we can do the Haftarah in the Eicha tune? Isn't that a form of kina, a form of dirge on Shabbat? We're not supposed to be dirging. So it must be that a tune is not Avilut per se. a tune just reminds you of something. It's a motif. You know, it's on Shabbat Mevarachin for Nisan. So we use Adir Hu tune for Yichad Hashehu. And Shabbat Mevarachin of Elul, we might use something from the Slichot. And Shabbat Mevarachin of Kislev, we'll use a Mal Sur tune. So Shabbat Chazon, the motif for the Tefillah will be, you know, the Elitzion tune and the Tisha B'Av tunes. It's not that we're actually mourning, but we're just, you know, using them as a motif. So, you know, the general, certainly as far as the Haftarah is concerned, the general minhag is to use the, Elitzion, is to use the Eicha tune. The official minhag of the United Synagogue, if you look in the blue book, it'll tell you that that you use the tune of Elitzion or another dirgeful tune as the tune for Lechadodi. On this Shabbat, but otherwise none of the Isurim of the 9 days apply. You can eat meat, drink wine, etc. On Shabbat Chazon as you would any Shabbat throughout the year. The only issues that come up is the question of Talmud Torah on Shabbat afternoon. Generally speaking, the Shulchan Aruch says on Erev Tisha B'Av in the afternoon you shouldn't learn Torah. Because Torah is makes you happy. It lifts your spirits. And we don't want to feel in that way on Tisha B'Av or Erev Tisha B'Av, even in the afternoon, especially as there are sad things that you can learn. So in actual fact, the whole year round, there's a machlok, every year there's a machloket in the Achronim, whether or not we really say this or whether we can be makel to learn regularly on Shabbat, on Erev Tisha B'Av in the afternoon. And certainly that machloket comes up with regard to Shabbat Erev Tisha B'Av. So some people are strict not to learn things other than the Tisha B'Av type material. Others are lenient and say you can learn anything. So I always say that Erev Tisha B'Av, a person can learn whatever they want to learn. It's halavai we should learn Torah. And once we start curtailing what we can learn, so then it only leads to bittul Torah. Sometimes people say to me, Rabbi, why are you always so strict about things? I say, I'm not so strict. I say, I hold that it's mutter to learn on Erev Tisha B'Av in the afternoon. That's a big leniency. So where we're keeping count of my colours, we can include that. The most important thing, of course, is that the fast comes in before Shabbat goes out. The fast comes in at Shkia, at sunset, even though Shabbat doesn't go out till about an hour later. Sunset this week, Erev Tisha B'Av, is something like 10 to 9, I think, is the timings. And Shabbat goes out at just gone 10 o'clock. So you've got an hour there before the end of Shabbat when one's not allowed to eat. The fast comes in at 9:09, that's Shkia, and Shabbat goes out at 11 minutes past 10. So you've got an hour when you can't eat. It's important to finish the meal before that point in time. So people, every time this happens, people say to me, how can you fast when it's still Shabbat? So the answer is, this is very passive. You know, nobody says that you have to spend every minute of Shabbat fressing. Some people like to spend every minute of Shabbat fressing. There's no particular mitzvah that you absolutely have to do that. So, you know, for an hour of Shabbat, I don't eat anything. So, okay, fine. You know, there are lots of hours over the course of Shabbat where I don't eat anything. Maybe I'm not allowed to, you know, flag something up and say, okay, I'm now not eating, even though I'd like to, because I'm observing Tisha B'Av. Maybe that would be inappropriate. But just, okay, we stop eating at this time is permissible. Shabbat goes out at 11 minutes past 10. What happens then? So we don't have Havdalah this Motzei Shabbat. There's actually a machloket in the Rishonim about what the correct practice is. And there are a number of dayot in the Rishonim. One opinion is that Bichlal, there's no Havdalah this week because seeing as you can't make Havdalah in the normal way, Al Hakos, so then you don't make Havdalah. Simple as that. And there's no Chiyuv of Havdalah. The second opinion is that you make Havdalah after the fast goes out, but you give the cost to a katan, to a child, to drink, and they can drink the wine, and that'll be fine. But we reject that because every few years it works out that Tisha B'Av is on a Motzei Shabbat, and the child might grow up thinking that, oh yeah, I remember as a kid, you know, I always used to drink the kos when Tisha B'Av was on a Motzei Shabbat. They'll reach adulthood and they'll think that you make Havdalah on Motzei Shabbat and drink the kos. Third option is that you make Havdalah before Shabbat goes out. Min Hadin, you're allowed to make Havdalah from Plag HaMincha onwards, an hour and a quarter before the end of Shabbat. We don't generally do that, but in extenuating circumstances, you're allowed to do that. So some Rishonim say, this Shabbat afternoon, we should make Havdalah just before Shkia. You're not allowed to do Malacha after that time. Shabbat's not out, but you could, just like on Friday night, you can make Kiddush before it gets dark. So on Shabbat afternoon, you can make Havdalah for Motzei Shabbat before it gets dark. Shabbat doesn't go out yet, but you can still make Havdalah. So some Rishonim suggest that for this week, but that's rejected because of the question, how are you going to drink the kos? Once you've made Havdalah, then Shabbat is out, at least in a certain sense. You can't do Malacha, but you said it's the end of Shabbat, in which case it's the beginning of Tisha B'Av, so you're not going to be able to drink the kos. And so you're stuck again, so it doesn't really solve your problems. So what we do, we follow the view that you can make Havdalah up until Lechatchila. Havdalah is always made on Motzei Shabbat. If one doesn't, there are extenuating circumstances, then you can make Havdalah on Sunday or Monday or even Tuesday till sunset on Tuesday. So a person wanted to make Havdalah now, they suddenly realize, I didn't make Havdalah last Motzei Shabbat. It's still another 12, 13 minutes till sunset, so they can make Havdalah now. So that's what we do. We delay Havdalah till the end of the fast. And then at the end of the fast, we make Havdalah, and then we're able to eat and drink. So there's no formal Havdalah, but we do have to say Baruch HaMavdil Bein Kodesh L'Chol. That's what we call a minimal Havdalah. It's formalizing the end of Shabbat. There's no bracha in it. Again, that's a machloket in the Rishonim. Some Rishonim say you do say a bracha, but we don't. But it's a formal declaration of the end of Shabbat, and then you can do malacha. So that bracha should be made at 11 minutes past 10 this week. Then we remove our big day Shabbat and our shoes, and we make the bracha of borei morei ha'esh as well. Bracha of borei morei ha'esh isn't absolutely part of Havdalah, meaning that even if you're not making Havdalah, you can still make the bracha borei morei ha'esh, and we make that bracha on the candle, and then we'll go to shul for Maariv and Eicha and the Kinot. So the reason why we take off Big Day Shabbat is because it would be incongruous to be wearing Big Day Shabbat when we're saying Eicha. Eicha is about how lowly we are and how everything is in ruins. And for us to sit there in Bekish and Strimal, or whatever it is we wear on Shabbat, it's just incongruous. It doesn't match up. So therefore, we remove the big day Shabbat before we come to shul. Somebody just put in the chat the question, what about the Sudat HaMafseket? So, Sudat HaMafseket means the final meal. Make sure you have a final meal, certainly. Don't go into the fast without a final meal. But none of the rules that usually apply to Sudat HaMafseket apply in this instance. So you don't eat the egg or the ashes. You don't sit on the floor. And you can also sing the regular, Shabbat afternoon Zmirot. Just like you would any other Shabbat. Okay, let's look at the Chamisha Inuyim of Tisha B'Av and just remind ourselves what they are and how they apply. So the first of the Chamisha Inuyim is Achila Oshtia. You're not allowed to eat or drink. There are five things that you can't do: eating and drinking, wearing leather or regular footwear, washing, anointing, and marital intimacy. So we'll run through these five and then some of the other minhagim of Tisha B'Av. So eating and drinking, obviously can't eat or drink. Generally with the minor fasts, we say that choleh and mu'uberet and manika, that's an ill person, a pregnant person, a woman who's nursing, doesn't have to fast. But on Tisha B'Av, we're more strict. And we say you do have to fast unless you're really ill. It doesn't need to be a life-threatening situation. We're more lenient than we are on Yom Kippur. But, you know, under normal circumstances, even if you find it difficult to fast, you're a bit unwell. So normally we'd say don't fast. But on Tisha B'Av, we say do fast. Likewise, a pregnant woman, you know, in principle has to fast. It's always as advisable, anybody who's pregnant, you know, just to check in. You know, about, you know, whether it's advisable to fast or not. You know, it's a certain point in the pregnancy, or if a woman's been having difficulty with the pregnancy, then certainly room to be lenient there. Also, a nursing woman, if there's a concern that the baby might not have enough milk, then it's, you know, just worth checking in with a local Orthodox rabbi about what the dinim might be, under what circumstances to break the fast. It's certainly more lenient than Tisha B'Av, but it's more strict than Shiva Asar B'Tammuz or anything like that. The advice, of course, always is to make sure you're well hydrated and rest as much as possible. Those are the key notions there for a woman who's pregnant or nursing. There could be the default position is they have to fast. There could be reasons why they might break their fast. Anybody who's not fasting, the person who's ill. As a person who's diabetic, for example, who's not able to regularly fast, or a person, say, has got gallstones and they need to drink regularly or something like that. So they're breaking their fast under rabbinic guidance. They have to remember they need to make havdalah before they can eat, because they're not allowed to eat usually before making havdalah. So they need to make havdalah. In this instance, we would say if you're making Havdalah on Tisha B'Av, that it's best to make Havdalah on Chamar Medina rather than on wine. Because even though we'll use wine for Havdalah during the 9 days, on Tisha B'Av itself, we want to avoid using wine. Hashem is Amon Paskin to use fruit juice or something like that, pure fruit juice to make Havdalah on in this instance. But otherwise, there's not a lot to... not a lot to say about it. Isur of Achila and Shtia as on any fast day. Rechitza, prohibition against washing, because washing is something which is a tanug, is a pleasurable experience. On Tisha B'Av, we have to have inui. We have to feel that we are uncomfortable and afflicted. So we say you're not even allowed to put your little finger into water if it's just to make it feel comfortable, and obviously we don't take a shower. Washing hands for you know, for hygiene purposes is a little bit different. So, you know, after you've gone to the bathroom, you need to wash your hands, and obviously you can. Last year, I remember the question came up, you know, everybody was being very, very careful about washing their hands with sanitizer and such things because of COVID. Was that permitted on Tisha B'Av? So the answer was definitely yes. That wasn't Rechitza shel Tanug in any sense. This year I sense that people are much more relaxed about it in general. You know, if you always wash your hands every time you come in of the house, come into the house and go out of the house, and you go into shul and come out of shul every time you wash your hands, then I think one can do so on Tisha B'Av as well. If one doesn't really worry about it so much, it's just sort of, you know, if you've been, you know, with a lot of people, then you wash your hands, then, you know, only wash your hands then. Well, it'd be better to use sanitizer, I guess, than regularly washing your hands. But, you know, for health reasons, you can. What if you're doing things like, you know, preparing food for children, or, you know, Tisha B'Av afternoon, you're doing the dishes, you know, Motzei Shabbat, people might not want to do the dishes, so it's not really appropriate to do the dishes Motzei Shabbat. They can wait till Sunday afternoon, usually. So you're doing the dishes. be best to wear gloves to do the dishes rather than getting your hands wet. In the morning, for Nagelwasser, so we do have to wash our hands in the morning, but we say you only do it up to the knuckles. You don't wash your whole hand, you only wash up to the knuckles, and then you say the bracha of Al Netilat Yadayim. I came across yesterday a fascinating observation of some of the Rishonim. Comes up the Meiri at the end of Masechet Tan, it mentions it, and other Rishonim as well, that even though all of the Chamisha Inuyim, all of the five prohibitions apply for the entire day of Tisha B'Av, there were communities in the in medieval times, in the times of the Rishonim, where the women had a minhag to wash their hair on Tisha B'Av afternoon in readiness for the arrival of the Mashiach. So there's a discussion in the Rishonim whether this is good practice or bad practice. On the one hand, it would seem to be bad practice because there's all the Chamisha Inuyim apply the whole day. On the other hand, it's reflecting women's belief in the coming of the Mashiach. So the Rishonim, some of them say that, yeah, okay, fine, where they do that, leave them be. They're a little bit condescending about women. Perhaps that was the reality of the women that they knew. They said that the women don't have strong emuna in the coming of the Mashiach. The men all have strong emuna. The women don't, and therefore this is mechazik their emuna in the coming of the Mashiach, and therefore we'll leave them be. But I think if any woman were to ask me the shaila, should she wash her hair on Tisha B'Av afternoon, I would say not to. Sicha. Sicha is what we call anointing oneself. So I don't think we really do that so much nowadays. Seems in olden times they used to sort of smear themselves with nicer oils. Maybe if you're going for a massage or something like that, you smear yourself with nice smelling oils and things like that. But that certainly going for a massage on Tisha B'Av afternoon is not an appropriate activity. A question does come up a little bit with, you know, if a person says he's got dry skin or something like that, so they put olive oil or something like that to stop it being dry. Shouldn't really do that on Tisha B'Av. Question comes up with deodorants, putting on deodorants. So it depends whether it's oil-based or water-based. If it's just water-based, then it's not sicha. Sicha is with oil. So if it's an oil-based deodorant, I don't know if there are such things. But if it's an oil-based deodorant, then you can't put it on Tisha B'Av. But this is an area which is, you know, not really so so practical. As far as the Issun Ne'ilat HaSandal is concerned, the prohibition against wearing shoes. So we actually touched on this, well, more than touched on, we had a whole shiur on this a couple of weeks ago on Shabbat afternoon in the shiur. It was a sugya in the last perek of Yoma, the issur of ne'ilat hasandal on Yom Kippur, and the question. So the rules are the same, but what type of footwear is not allowed? So the Shulchan Aruch paskens that the only type of footwear that you're not allowed to wear is leather footwear. As long as it's not leather, then you're allowed to wear it on Yom Kippur and Kal Vachomer on Tisha B'Av. But actually, a number of Rishonim said that anything that protects the foot well is prohibited also. And there are achronim who endorse that position or encourage that position. But many people wear trainers on Yom Kippur and on Tisha B'Av. I'm not coming to say whether people should or shouldn't wear trainers, but certainly there are those who think that it's better not to wear trainers, because certainly modern trainers, you know, they're as comfortable as regular shoes, and they're as effective as regular shoes. Some of the Rishonim feel that you need to be able to feel the hardness of the ground through your shoes, and a good pair of trainers, you certainly can't feel the hardness of the ground. A question does come up in a regular year. You know, person, it's not a Sunday, a person needs to go into the office in the afternoon on Tisha B'Av. So, you know, they need to put on shoes. So in that case, we permit it, but should be with a, we say, put a little bit of earth in the shoes as well, so it feels uncomfortable to you. Nowadays, I mean, this year there's no need to worry about it at all. It's a Sunday, number one. Number two, who goes into the office these days? Some people do, but not so many people. Number three, I think sartorial standards have changed sufficiently that many people can go into the office wearing trainers in any event. So you know, it wouldn't be such a question. But I suppose it depends on what the nature is of your job and what the dress code will be. The final one of the Chamisha Inuyim, the five afflictions that we have to observe on Tisha B'Av, is the Issur Tashmish HaMita, the prohibition against the marital intimacy. And the poskim say that includes not just actual marital intimacy, but any form of affection between husband and wife. They need to behave as if the woman is a nida. So the bed should be separated on Tisha B'Av night, and also, you know, the couple should be careful not to touch each other. It's not clear to me that the harchakot apply. I think you can pass things from one to another, but you know, the so certainly coming into physical contact, certainly in the evening, is something which should be avoided. So those are the five things which are prohibited, Medina de Gemara. There are a couple of other things which there is a minhag not to do. There are various minhagim to do with Tisha B'Av. One is that we don't sit on a regular chair in the night of Tisha B'Av or in the daytime. So this isn't mentioned in the Gemara. And that's the reason why we're able to be more lenient about it. Our minhag is that after chatzot, after midday, we will sit on a regular chair, because it's not mentioned in the Gemara, so we only have to be strict through the reading of the kinot, and at night in the afternoon already we start having a sense of nechama, start looking forward to the future somewhat, so we get up from our chairs. So the question comes up: what type of chairs do you have to sit on? So when sitting shiva, we usually say a person. I think we had the Torah talk shir on this a little while back. When sitting shiva, a person should sit on something not higher than three tefachim, because with three tefachim we can say lavud, and it's as if you're sitting on the ground. On Tisha B'Av, that rule doesn't particularly come up. It's just, you know, it should be something low. So, you know, not a regular chair, a low chair. Well, if it's a bit more than three tefachim, you don't need to worry so much. It's interesting, the Shulchan Aruch says, Tavkuf Nun Tetzif Gimel, Le'al Tisha B'Av Yomo, Yoshmin Beit HaKnesset La'aretz, Ad Tefilat HaMincha. So on Tisha B'Av night and the day, you sit on the ground until Mincha. And then the Rama says, "V'achshav nagu leshev al safta lehem miyad achar sheyatzu mibeit hakneset shachrit." No, now we'll sit on regular chairs as soon as we left shul in the morning. Marichim im hakinot ad mat kodem chatzot. And anyhow, you know, the kinot take till you know, a bit before chatzot, a bit before midday, and then you'll be able to get up and sit regularly. The Mishnah Berurah says, anyhow, after shul there was an old minhag to go to the Beit HaKvarot, to go to the cemetery. And so by the time you get home, it's chatzot. So it's one of these things. Every year I see sort of various shuls say, you know, chatzot is at, you know, 107 or 104, whatever. That's the time when you can sit on a regular chair. I don't know if one actually has to be so medactic, so strict and particular with chatzot in this regard as we are in other areas of halacha. Meaning, you know, the afikoman, we have to eat by midnight. There's no way you can daven shachrit after chatzot. You know, there are rules like that. But this is a little bit different in terms of, it's just, you know, when have we got this shift? It's not, you know, midnight is something physical happens and it's no longer possible to daven, you know, to eat the afikoman. You know, midday, you know, that's the end of the morning. There's no way you can daven shachrit, which is a morning prayer. Here the Rama says, you know, you get up and sit on your chairs after you've left shul, which is, you know, round about chatzot time. So, yeah, I think some shuls, you know, after the kinnot, you know, they have a share. So, you know, kinnot finish at 1 o'clock. So I think you can sit down on the chairs for the share at 1 o'clock, and you don't have to sit on the floor till 1:04, and then, you know, everybody climb off the floor. That's, I haven't seen this said specifically anywhere, but I think that's the case. So I suppose that's another leniency that I have. Another thing which doesn't appear in the Gemara, but is a practice that we have on Tisha B'Av, is that we don't lay tefillin in the morning of Tisha B'Av. Tefillin are a pe'er. They are an adornment. They're something, it's like a crown that we're wearing. And that's not appropriate on Tisha B'Av. There's nothing to be proud about. We're dejected. In actual fact, an avel also doesn't wear tefillin on the first day of Shiva. So, again, this isn't mentioned in the Gemara. And there are various different minhagim. Some Rishonim say that, yeah, we do lay tefillin as regular on Tisha B'Av. I believe there are some Sephardi communities where that's the case. They lay tefillin in the morning, then they take them off for the kinnot. So some Sephardim lay tefillin as usual. Others have the practice, as we do, the general Ashkenazi practice, is to lay tefillin in the afternoon. We put on our tefillin at mincha time. That's when there's a sense of nechama, sense of consolation. The Rambam says that there's a minhag that some people have on Tisha B'Av of not wearing the tefillin shel rosh. So they wear the tefillin shel yad as usual, but the tefillin shel rosh they don't wear, because the tefillin shel rosh is a sign of pride, and so that we don't wear. Doesn't mention any difference between shachrit and mincha. We put on the tefillin shel yad as usual, and not the tefillin shel rosh. And then I think there are some rishonim also say not to wear tefillin at all, but we do wear tefillin. So those are the main themes that come up. Obviously, there's the question about what the nature of the day should be. There's a discussion about Issa Malacha. Are you allowed to do Malacha on Tisha B'Av? So Min HaDin, strictly speaking, you are, certainly after Chatzot. But the Minhag is to avoid it if possible. Why is that? So that you can focus on the Avelut. And if you go to work, you get distracted from that. So, you know, I'm very glad from a religious perspective, for example, that the Euro 2020 finals took place last Sunday rather than this coming Sunday. Whether or not it was appropriate, you know, during the 9 days to engage with it is one question. But certainly, I can say definitely on Tisha B'Av itself, it wouldn't be appropriate to watch the football. And, you know, people who use, you know, Tisha B'Av as a quiet day to read the Sunday papers and to watch the telly, that's certainly not appropriate. There is now a lot of audiovisual material, a lot of books that one can read to put oneself into a sense of dejection and mourning. One of the challenges, contemporary challenges of Tisha B'Av, I would say, is to remember Churban HaBayit. Why do I say that? Because it's something very easy. I've seen this, you know, in some places, you know, Tisha B'Av has become another Yom HaShoah. Yom HaShoah is very important. And I would say that commemoration of the Shoah is an important part of Tisha B'Av as well. Because Tisha B'Av is a commemoration for all the tragedies that have befallen Am Yisrael over the course of time. But, you know, the key tragedy and the catalyst for everything is the Churban HaBayit. So we do have to mention the Shoah, and that should be one of our kinot. And it's certainly, you know, there's a lot of appropriate material, you know, to watch in the afternoon. And of course, it's easier for us to identify with the Shoah. It was less time ago than the Churban HaBayit, but nevertheless, you know, thinking about the Churban HaBayit and the loss of the loss of an abode for the Shekhinah and Jewish sovereignty should be the focus of what we're thinking about over the course of Tisha B'Av. I think it's important to make sure that we, as much as possible, can be in the right frame of mind. I know sometimes people use the expression, that's have an easy fast, or they say tzom kal for Tisha B'Av. I don't think that's what it's about. Somebody once used the expression to me, tzom mashma'uti, have a meaningful fast. I think that's very appropriate. Tisha B'Av isn't supposed to be about a tzom kal, having an easy fast. I'm supposed to, if I can feel something of the distress that Am Yisrael would have felt at the time of Churban HaBayit, then I think that's a positive thing. It's not about finding it easy. Somebody just put in the chat a question about children's day camps on Tisha B'Av. I think that's fine. You've got to do something with your kids on Tisha B'Av. Hopefully, if it's a full day camp, hopefully part of it will have a Tisha B'Av themed activity. It's difficult to get kids fully to engage with it when they're with their friends, but kids can't mourn, so certainly not the whole day. So they know it's Tisha B'Av, but you've got to keep them occupied, and if you don't send them to camp, the parents are going to have to occupy them. So if you want to send them to camp, that's also fine. So I think this covers the main themes of Tisha B'Av. Always worth reviewing what they are. Just to go back momentarily to this idea of engaging with the themes of the day, Rav Soloveitchik talks about the significance of the kinot. The kinot, he says, are actually a kiyum. That means a fulfillment of what Tisha B'Av is about, because it says Tisha B'Av is not just about fasting, but it's also about identifying with the Churban HaBayit and the tragedies that happened, and therefore that's why we read kinot, similar to Seder night. Seder night, we read the Haggadah so that we will feel that we went out of Mitzrayim. And on Tisha B'Av, we read the Kinot so that we will have a sense that we were present, if not present at the Churban HaBayit, at least that something is missing in our lives. And we have to feel that this is a real tragedy for us. And that's the purpose of the Kinot. So I don't know if anybody's got any questions here. But, if anything comes up, then please feel free to message me through in the next couple of